And we are live. Hey friends, welcome to the Everything's Changing podcast with Matt Collins. My name is Matt Collins, and this is a podcast a bit about music, creativity, successful habits, and then just whatever else that I find interesting for whoever I'm hanging out with. And I'm really stoked to have Mr. Sam Besman-Burt here on the show today. He is a musician, amazing guitarist, bass player, and probably a number of other instruments. He's an educator at TAFE, also through schools and different programs, business owner, now a house owner, and I'm sure there's a lot of other, maybe monikers isn't the right term, but hats you wear and stuff, and do really well at. But welcome to the podcast, Sam.
Thanks so much. Yeah, I think the only one there I can really say solidly that I am is a house owner, because the debt is crippling and the dust behind my eye from sawing something today. Yeah, that's there. So that feels as real as ever.
Yeah, I think it is one of those, like, I think like you're signing up for an endless job as well. Like, but it's such a good thing, but like it is just like, yeah, always having something to do, like, you know, every time you drive in the driveway, you're like, oh, those plants.
Totally. Oh, man, you get it. Like, you get it. And it's not the story we're sold. It's like, you know, from birth, it's like, you haven't got a house yet. Come on. Like, what are you doing? You're 3 years old. Like, sort that shit out. But, yeah, we kind of inherently with the Australian culture is like, all right, get that house. Get that bread so that you can get that house, and then everything will be, you know, a little bit more adult, I think.
Yep.
So that's a terrifying word in itself. But yeah, you know, the house thing has been a real journey, and it definitely feels like, you know, as a musician and a creative, you know, it's always, you feel a bit proud when you're signing the papers and they're like, occupation, please. And they're waiting for like tradie or, you know, something along the lines of that can hold down a secure job. And, you know, when you get to write musician, you feel like, yeah, it's a little bit like, hell yeah, well done, Sam. And, you know, fuck everyone else.
Yeah,
you hold that stuff as a badge. And, it's cool. And being on the other side of that is like, you know, doing the work on the house now, because it's, it's one of those things. You know, COVID's ever present and has been a crazy year. But, that's given us the opportunity to kind of work on that and get some other skills under the belt, which, you know, I really love doing. You know, music is my first love with that. And that's just this great insight into being, you know, I guess, so like a lifelong masochist, you
know? I was thinking of a different word, but yeah.
But that's it, right? It's like, okay, that's still haven't nailed it. You know, you're never quite happy with everything you do, and you're always improving, I guess, is the more like positive way to look at that. And the house thing is, you know, that in itself. So it's cool. You know, it's really good fun. Go get a house.
Yeah, this is a real estate podcast now. But I think you've done so well in like what's been a trying time for a lot of people, and it could have been one of those things where you go, oh, like, you know, is this the right time to buy, even because like you went into it when the world was in a kind of stable place like that, and then so there was probably a bit of chance to kind of go, oh, actually this isn't the right time, kind of thing. And it's really awesome.
Yeah, it's cool. It's kind of an analogy for like how I've lived most of my life, which is like, it's not ideal, but you know, let's just do it, you know, and learn and figure it out from there, and try and you know, with the support of friends and your network and everything like that, really take the opportunity to go, okay, what can I learn from this? You know, it's not just a full stop on this next project. It's what next with it as well.
Yeah. And I really admired that about you. You don't sort of shy away from a challenge, and you're always looking for something to kind of push you forward. Like that. It's so good. I kind of would like to sort of go back to where it all began. Like, when you were born, how was
that? We can go further back than that if you want. Dad and mama.
With music, like, where did that kind of come from, and where was like that first sort of thing where you like looked at a guitar or a song and or
Yeah, totally. I music was kind of the soundtrack to a lot of my life before I was playing it, you know, and it wasn't the most romantic way of falling into playing music and being a practitioner in that sense. It was always surrounded by me, by mom and dad, and they had their favorites, you know, and they would play it on repeat. And I'd love that.
What were they like? What?
Yeah. So mom was like a big Prince fan. She was a big funk and soul, she'd Bee Gees and all that kind of stuff. Stuff that I found so daggy at the time. Like those parts was like, oh, this is kind of cool. And then at that point, I was like, "Mom, this has got to go," you know. And then Dad was, Jeff Buckley and Nick Cave, Crowded House, BB King. So it was a pretty eclectic mix, amongst all of that. And then, I was like, "Yeah, take it or leave it." At the time, and then, as your teens come around, your parents must be looking at you like, "Oh Christ, okay, what do we do here? Like, how do we?" Pour his energy in a place where it's like not going to kill him and it's not going to be like lifelong bad habits. So Dad got me a guitar and he's like, this. And I was like, I've had no interest in music, like playing it at all. But now I have the like obligation to appease.
That Simpsons, like, you better get real good real fast. Yeah. 100%.
And Dad was like, oh yeah, it's not that hard. Like, there's this song, and he'd never played Taught Me Smoke on the Water Wrong. It's just like, just so tragic. But yeah, from there, I started loving it. And for me, it was like a challenge. Like we were saying before, it's like throwing yourself into something and going, oh, I don't really know how to do this, but I reckon I can figure it out. And that was cool because it's like, it's the world's biggest problem to unlock. And I love that side of things. And then eventually it moved to working with friends, and they started picking out instruments as well. And, in a small town where there's not a lot to do, you kind of busy yourself with things like that and catch up and learning songs and then writing songs about other friends, shitty girlfriends at the time. And then yeah. It's like, this is a not so subtle message to drop her. And then we ended up busking and I started going like, oh, I think I could do this. And then school kind of helped. I had some great teachers there. It's a funny thing. Like, I think noticing it now, there's a lot of parts to my music career, which I think is just surrounding by people. Yep. I find that a lot of musicians in general are just inspiring people, and whether it's, mates who are learning at the time really young or my teacher at the time who just did not fit the mold of, a small town music teacher. He was just the most insane man on the planet. He was brilliant, and I like that. I didn't want to do the ordinary thing. And I saw a lot of people doing that and that scared the shit out of me. So, I was like, I'm happy to work a little bit harder and maybe not have such a certain future career-wise or all the other, metrics that people are valuing themselves or in high school when they're like, what are you going to do when you grow up and, how much money are you going to make and all that, real stuff that's so present for them.
Yeah.
I was like, as long as I'm surrounded by like captivating, interesting, fucking weird people, that's all, it's a success measure for me. That was kind of it really. Like it wasn't any prettier than that, but yeah, it was enough to get moving with it and take it a bit seriously.
And you sort of touched on your music teacher and just sort of maybe your idea of what like a musical lifestyle would be. Was there anything else that kind of showcased that? Like, was there like a certain artist that you sort of like watched a documentary on or like just saw their big concert or anything like that?
Actually, it kind of brings it to mind. We had like one of mum's mates who was just like a fanatic music lover, didn't ever play, but he would kind of drop by and they'd catch up and he'd be like, oh Sam, I heard you playing guitar, like check this out, and he brought me these incredible DVDs at the time and it was just like he had collections of them. And he brought me like Stevie Ray Vaughan's Live at the El Macumbo.
Wow.
And that was just like, if you've not seen it, it's fucking ridiculous. Like it's,
is that where he does the throwing but behind his back? He like kind of gets bring, boom.
Yeah, yeah. And like plays a guitar on the ground behind his head. And like that flashy sort of thing, I guess, to a 14-year-old was like, holy shit, this is amazing. And just the virtuosity, like he was playing. You know, there was a couple of When Hell Freezes Over, which is like an Eagles, when they got back reunion kind of show. There was Jeff Buckley. You know, he brought me some books of like Nirvana's, Kurt Cobain's biography.
Yep.
And then, you know, read Jimi Hendrix's. And then that kind of material was then, you know, just starting to wrap me in this musical world of like understanding the personalities behind it as well as the artists. And
yeah,
and that was cool. That was really cool. It's good to, I guess, like going back to that small town thing, it's just like dreaming big, you know, of all these other worlds and lives that have been lived in far off places like the States or the Deep South or England, and just going like, man, there's a whole lot more than Nambucca going on. And
that really
kind of stoked the fire for me. Yeah.
That's so good. Mm. You played a gig on the weekend at Sunny Coast. Who was that with? And I got a bit of ginger. I got one and I was like...
Excuse me.
I put fresh ginger in his tea.
That's a spicy meatball. So played it up on the Sunny Coast. Yeah. At Yamundi at the Imperial Hotel. That's with a band called Volcanic Lovers, and they're some near and dear friends of mine who we kind of met through university at Southern Cross, who I was working with and doing a lot of music with, and that was really cool. And then we all went our separate ways for a little while. So I went down to Melbourne, a few friends went overseas, but then we all came back and we're living on the Gold Coast now. So yeah, we kind of got the band happening again, and then, yeah, you know, been playing for 2 years. But you know, most recently, going back to your question, the Yamundi gig was great. You know, it was beautiful. It was just another good example, I guess, like reflection, like 10 years on, it's going like, hey, this is it.
Yeah.
You're surrounded by all these crazy and weird people and they're your best mates. And you're playing some really good music and having heaps of fun and just unlocking doors that you wouldn't really see otherwise. You know, it's like the public gets to pay a ticket to go in and listen, and they get to unlock that door, right? And they see a thing that they might not have ever seen. And you get that, but you get like the all access passes kind of thing.
Yeah.
So yeah. And playing with those guys is great because, you know, there's a caliber of musicians that we were supporting, Emily Watamara, and Jem Cassadaly, who are just like, world class. Like,
yeah. I got to see them, I think, two nights before up in Brizzy, and Jem was just like, I don't know. It was like watching like Michael Jordan just swish. Like she was just so, and she's like 20, and just like her level of piano playing, her comfortability on stage, her personality on stage as well. She was just like this like sweet country girl, just like, yeah, he's going, I'm going to play some songs. Hope you like it. And then like, whoa.
Yeah.
Like, and yeah, her voice just was like so, so beautiful.
Yeah.
Like it was like that. And then, Emily just being like, you know, being from Australia but seeming quite exotic because of her upbringing and her obviously her cultural and sort of background coming from like Northern Territory and everything like that.
I was really hoping for her to be a bitch, but she's just so she's just like knocks it out of the park completely. And yeah, at backstage, like she was just like all smiles, all hugs, all compliments, and was just stoked to be there, you know? And that's a really cool thing. Like, yeah, for the artist not to necessarily be so different from the person as well. She was just like so cool. Big fan.
Yeah. It's funny. Like just back to what you're talking about before, the, having just sort of like pinching yourself and realizing how weird your life is compared to just other people. And other people have obviously like weird life compared to us as well. Like we go, whoa, like that's so different. But like, yeah, just like traveling and performing and things like that. Are there times where you sort of have taken it for granted, and then other times where you, like, cause yeah, I often forget that people don't really know what it's like.
Yeah, I wonder about that, like taking for granted like the music side of things, because it is, you know, you'll hear it from a lot of different people, but I feel like music isn't just a career, it's a lifestyle.
Yep.
You know, so there's no part of it it switches off, you know, so it's always there. So I don't know if I necessarily take it for granted, in the sense that I'm unaware that it's happening.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think, you know, like one side of it's like touring and yeah, it's got its pros and cons. You're like, you see these beautiful places, you're money, but maybe you miss someone's birthday or a wedding, yeah, or something like that. Or it's, you know, you're eating shitty food at 2 a.m. from some sketchy backwater, like pub or RSL.
Like Jamie.
Like food poisoning is a real threat. But yeah, you know, that's parts of the pros and cons. And then, you know, the money side of things when gigs aren't happening. So yeah, it kind of does, it's constantly like oscillating between, you know, good and bad. So I guess in that sense, do you take it for granted? It's like, no, because it's not always going well, you, yep, know? So I feel like if something's always great, then you're like, oh yeah, I do take this for granted because I don't have any comparison.
Yeah.
And the comparison for me is all those tricky times as well.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think to a degree, like COVID, it has been a bit of a kind of what's life like without,
yeah,
at least you know, one major aspect of being a musician and which is touring and performing. Mm. I've quite enjoyed that because it was like my foot was down on the accelerator for, you know, God knows how many years, mm, like pretty much since uni. And probably before, even during uni and before it, I've always just had this like, you know, get out there, do this kind of thing. And this was like, oh, I've literally got an excuse to have a break.
Yeah.
And really, really enjoyed, I don't know, like feeling a little bit more normal, I guess.
Yeah. Like, okay. Yeah. That's cool. And honestly, I think it's not until you do it that you realize it, you know, because like you said, like, foot down, accelerator going. You've got to work so much harder because of the industry, but you kind of allow yourself the chance to, like, you know, what's life without music?
Yeah.
Because as soon as you think that, you know, the dream kind of feels like it bursts and you lose that momentum that everyone else is doing. So you've got to be doing.
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, what were some of the things that you didn't realize or like about being normal that you're loving at the moment?
Yeah, well, I've just started martial arts. That's like a big one that I've like never kind of let myself sort of get a big hobby that's outside of music.
Yeah.
And there's probably a few other examples, but that's one where I've always just like, oh, you know, what if I've got a rehearsal that night? So I can't commit to it. You know, I've had like this kind of excuse in my brain for a long time to not do a lot of things. Mm. And then now, now living with you, like just seeing all the things that you've achieved outside of music as well has been really inspiring. And it's like, I feel like it's rubbed off on me. Cool. In a really good way. And, but yeah, there's just been a lot of, getting rid of the excuse making, mm-hmm, like not being able to use music as an excuse to not do something else or dive into something else or learn something.
Mm.
'Cause it was always, you know, like the more time I spend on something else, the less I'm spending on the thing that is so attached to my identity.
Sure.
Kind of thing. And then it's like when that identity can't really be its full self, it's like, you know, your kind of ego takes a bit of a hit and you're just like, but now it's like, I don't know. I've had a really great experience with this kind of downtime, and it's sort of heating up here in Australia and stuff now again. Mm. And like gigs are happening, and so it's been a really good break and I'm ready to go back to it.
Yeah,
and
cool.
Yeah.
Do you think you would have ever slowed down? Like if COVID hadn't, cause I know I wouldn't have.
Yeah. I don't think I would have. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Nowhere near to this level or even, at all. Maybe, when I have kids, that'd probably be the only thing that would,
yeah.
And even then you probably would like, oh, do I need to work harder because I've got this, you know, such a big, another part of my life kind of thing that I've got to look after and stuff. And then I'm like, you got to work double hard.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's great examples like, Brad and, what's his name? Who do you work with?
Like, Ben Crawford and even Blaze when we were at uni, like, going to uni after having kids and all that, I was like, that's a thing.
Yeah.
That? Like you can actually do that. And he like killed it. He was, you know, ducks of the
yeah, yeah, they just smash it.
Like, God damn.
They've just been out in the world and just like have such a better work ethic than people who are just straight. Oh, not everyone. I can't lump everyone. There's a lot of people who finish school and go and do so well. But yeah, like they just appreciate that opportunity so much more because they've slogged it in some other thing and now get to do what they love.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. And, you know, going into uni, going like, yeah, music's the right thing for me. But having no life experience, you know, I'd feel like if I did that again now, you know, with a few more years under your belt, it'd be great to do it again, you know, but I guess you're always learning. You just don't need an institution to necessarily make that happen.
Yeah, you're definitely someone who, it's a bit of a, wasn't really a segue, but who...
Segue this.
Yeah, we'll segue it. I don't know, you get a lot done and you always sort of seem pretty inspired musically. Like what inspires you? Like do people inspire you or do other artists or... yeah, like how do you kind of keep that fire going with music?
With like inspiration and creativity?
Yeah.
Yeah, it waxes and wanes like everything. For me, like I'm always trying to enrich my life, right? Life being like the never-ending pool of inspiration.
You know?
And that can be good and bad and every other color in between and, you know, experiences it for me. So, you know, saying yes to a lot of these crazy experiences and doing things that are probably well out of my skill set and, you know, definitely have their burden on myself and everyone around me, you know, it ends up being like a well to draw from when you need something like that. And, you know, that's one side of things.
Yeah, you can like never really be bored.
No,
you've got no excuse to be bored. I think you can always learn another instrument and there's just like a lifetime in that.
Yeah, yeah, like, totally. It's like, you're not bored. You've just got to like, you're a boring person. It's, you know, as callous as that sounds, it's like, there's a whole world of cool shit to be doing out there. And, you know, I think I don't necessarily think about things, before I throw myself into them, because I just want to feel the emotions of experience and skill sets and learning and that's great for me. And then I guess like coming back to music, you know, that's the human side of things. And, you know, if I have a gig or if I have a project I'm working on, that kind of puts the blinders on a bit more, which is great because you've got parameters to work in. Like we were saying before, like, you know, music is so big, you know, you can choose anything, any possible combination of colors and sounds and different personalities on the instruments or different genres or whatever it might be. But if you have a project around that, an end goal, especially with a team or something like that, you can assess that and go, cool, all right, so that's the goal. What are my parameters here? What are our, like, you know, KPIs, you know?
Yeah.
And in that sense of things, like I think of it more of a problem solving stepwise solution.
Yeah.
And it's, I guess, why it's been cool to work with a lot of different artists over the years, because each one has a different skill set. And it's not just the monetary value of, hey, we need to sell big numbers here.
Yep.
It's like, hey, I actually want to realize this sound that's in my head. Or, hey, I'm quite, you know, naturally... or quite anxious about this, what a lot of people are. So how do you navigate that, their mental health, and support them without overstepping the mark?
Yep.
But still leading them in the right direction. You know, it's multifaceted and I really enjoy that side of things too. So yeah, I guess it's just keeping that juggling happening and constantly looking those challenges in the eye and going, what are you? Can I help here?
Yeah.
If I can't, who can? Or what can I learn to get that job done?
Yeah, because like every project has a different mission statement. 100%. Like there's just as much work to do, but the goalposts are different kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and you're so good at helping others, you know, both as a teaching capacity, but also as like, you know, a session musician or maybe as a music, MD, music yeah. director. Yeah. And yeah, that's like one thing having worked with you on a few different projects. Yeah. Really, really admire. That's Thanks. Like really cool.
That's good. It's like, it's great to hear that from someone that's doing a lot of that stuff themselves too. Cause you know, it's like a musician. You see another musician, you're like, hey, it's like, you know how hard this fucking thing is. Yeah. Right. So like you're on that common ground. So it's cool to have someone else talk the talk in that capacity. Cause you're like, yeah, it is, it's tricky, but it's super rewarding.
Yeah.
And you get to be a part of it, you know.
That is that thing. It's like music can be pretty like, I wouldn't say ruthless, but it can be like a lot of effort to not an immediate reward, at least. Mm-hmm. Like it's like, well, it depends how you set it up kind of thing for yourself, like what your goals are and your mission statement and everything like that. How has your relationship with music and money been? So like, I think that's like something that a lot of people struggle with, both like making money, but also just the relationship of like what, like, how you look at money itself relating to art as well.
Yeah. I think, from the get go, I was not too determined on necessarily making money, you know, just enough to get by would be enough, you know. Yep. But my value system was set in a different space. I wanted to experience, I wanted to be a part of the music scene, I wanted to, you know, feel all these highs and lows that, you know, are allowed to a creative, you know. And I think everyone can be a creative, they've just got to find their path or their
medium.
Yeah, totally. So, you know, for me, it wasn't so stressful in those initial years because I was like, man, I'm doing it. You know, this is really great. And, you know, then the ever-pressing reality of like making money, you know, you need that to survive. It's this universal currency that's like, hey, here's this. Can I have this back? And that's, you know, shelter or food or whatever it might be. But when that started to pop its head up, you know, uni was like, okay, this is probably a logical step in the right direction. It's going to qualify me to be better at my job, and hopefully that allows me more opportunities. I'm not sure what that is yet.
Yep.
So from there, I was like, okay, that's a logical step. And then I went down to Melbourne after that, and I was like, cool, okay, I've got my qual. Money now, right? Money, you know, and you're in Melbourne because the next logical step is like Melbourne seems to be one of the creative hubs of Australia, you know, if not the world.
Yeah.
And I went down there and just totally just got slapped in the face with this like big old Melbourne shaped hand, you know. And
yeah, like, cause we grew up and then also studied in a smaller sort of place. Yeah. I wouldn't say we were big fish in a little pond, but we were in a little pond, like kind of thing. And then to be a little fish in a really, really big pond, it's like crazy,
you know? Yeah. And you know, Melbourne as a city, you know, outside of just the music industry, it's like it's more expensive, you know. It is pressing. You do need a lot more money to live in that space, especially if you want to enjoy the fruits that it has to offer. So from there I was like, okay, well, let's figure this out then. You know, I've seen other people start businesses. I reckon I can do that. And started a covers band, doing weddings and things like that. That made sense. It was low output as far as my skill set. I knew a lot of the things. There was still plenty of things to learn from. But, you know, I surrounded myself with people that could fill those skill areas and ended up, you know, through my network and meeting a lot of people, just building this, you know, wedding business that started to slowly bring in cash, which was cool. And, you know, I've had every other job in between to support that, as every other musician has too. So, you know, I was teaching circus, I was working at a clothes shop, I was serving potatoes, you know. It's a funny thing. So you get all these jobs on the way, but you know, fast forward to now, I guess, is after doing a lot of those things, my relationship with money and where music sits now is an interesting one. I kind of think about it in these three buckets. And a good friend of mine, Dylan, has kind of explain a lot of this to me. And I think it was like Ari Herstand, who's another incredible musician and kind of entrepreneur. He talks about them, but it's like there's three buckets. Number one is going to be your passion. You know, imagine a big old love heart and like, this is it. Like yep. whatever it is, this is filling you with inspiration and fuel. And yes, this is like, this is how I saw my life going. And then the second one is, you know, your career trajectory. So whatever those goals are. So yep. I was like, okay, that's cool. So I want to be playing music. I want to be playing guitar. I want to be playing with friends. I'm playing.
So stages. Like, looking at it, like this is going to, like the second bucket's kind of, this is helping me get to where I want to get to.
Yes.
Yeah. Maybe not exactly where I want to be when I'm doing it, but it's like, I'm going to meet, you know, five new potential contacts, or yeah. I'm going to be exposed to a new audience or this kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You know, stepping stones or however you want to think about it. That was number two. And then the third one, you know, is money again. Yeah. And so I started thinking about my life and the decisions I made based around those.
Yeah.
And it's not, they have to fill every bucket.
Yeah.
You know, they have to fill them to a certain capacity each, or one's going to be empty. You know, maybe yep. this is a project of love where I don't get paid anything. In fact, yep. it costs me fuel and time and all those other yep. things, but it really fills the career bucket up. It's a really great opportunity. And you know, it's doing all these things. You know, I played over in Vietnam last year and tour managed and done, I had just a great time. And it cost me a little bit of cash, but hey, you know, businesses work at a loss for a long time,
yep.
but it allowed me so many more opportunities to learn and grow. And then there's other gigs where you're doing, you know, a lot of corporate gigs where not a lot of people are listening, but you're earning some good cash and,
yep.
and that's that. So yeah, for me, I was a bit frustrated with the music industry for a while because it wasn't filling every bucket.
Yeah.
So when I started to make sense and simplify it a bit more, I could take control of that, I yeah. feel. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll maybe like help you make decisions, like whether or not, you know how there's ones where you go offered a gig and you're like, your gut's probably telling you something. You're like, oh, it's not a hell yeah, but it's a maybe. But once you have that, maybe like that analogy of the buckets, it's like you can kind of go no,
yep.
or I can go yep for 3 weeks I'm going to do this, beyond that I can't take it anymore, or I'm going to do this, but I'm going to make sure it doesn't cost me too much money, but it's like every bit of fun that you could ever have, and it's that kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think outside of just money too, like making those decisions, you know, we were talking just before about you kind of saying yes to everything because you've got to,
yep.
know, you've got to say yes to all these opportunities because you don't know which one's going to be the one.
Yeah.
But, you know, to the point of, you know, our own like mental health deterioration, yeah. physical health, and yeah, it's a real thing, right? So having those allows you to just take more control, I guess. Yep. Yeah.
That's a really good sort of subject to touch on is mental health. You know, people in creative industries tend to be more prone to mental health issues and things like that, but as well as the industry itself with its you know, unstable work kind of contracts and kind of you're putting your I don't know, it feels like if it's your creative project and it maybe isn't getting the reward that you want and you kind of feel your personal value deflate kind of thing like that. So like you kind of, basically your ego and your identity are attached to your project. Mm. And then if that's not happening, that can really affect your sort of, you can feel lower than say someone who is in a business venture that doesn't go very well. You know, I don't really, I wouldn't be able to speak for all business or anything like that, but how do you sort of keep on top of your mental health? Do you have any kind of any things that have helped on the way? And maybe has there been a journey of where you've sort of hit a point and you're like, oh, wait, this isn't working, and you've made a change and it has helped kind of thing?
Mm. Yeah, it's something that's like quite near and dear to my heart, because I know a lot of musicians and I know a lot of people that have experienced, you know, mental health issues. And for me, like, I think just starting off in a small town, you know, it's that same idea. It's like this stuff's not talked about, you know, at all, let alone males, you know, in particular for me anyway. So it was a totally new thing. And I think I found out, you know, through, you know, how I learned a lot of my lessons by throwing myself into something to a point where I was well over my head. And that was when I went down to Melbourne and I was just taking on too much. And it came to this very logical in hindsight conclusion of like, mate, you can't keep this up, you know?
Yeah.
And that ended up with some pretty severe depression, you know?
Oh,
and yeah, it was quite tricky. And, you know, I had a dear friend of mine, go through a similar thing, and we, you know, not that we were so transparent in our communication about it, but we identified it in each other. And it was his strength of actually going to see a psych and a counselor that started to unpack the stigma around it. And I was like, well, you know, if it's good enough for him, I guess I'll figure it out. You know, like maybe let's go do this. And with some support, I went and did that. And it was great.
Yep.
It was terrifying and as hard as it could ever be, you know, doing something like that, because you really got to admit, you know, an ego death and all these other things for, you know, that was my experience. But that gave me the start to the tools of what I would build on for those next years to now. And I still grow with these to take into account, you know, the ups and downs of life and the music industry. So, you know, I think for me at the moment, you know, some skill, like things I do is like, I make sure I'm, you know, active, you know, I've got to, you know, we've used this kind of expression before. It's like, you got to go for your run, you know, like a dog, like you got to be well watered and fed and, get your 20 minutes to 2.5 hours of tennis. So, you know, what that looks like for you might be very different, but in essence, I think it's like fire up those endorphins, identify out of your music for a moment and technology and be in real life, which is, you know, out in nature. So I think those things, like, that's why, you know, physical activity is a real no brainer for me. It ticks so many boxes and it's so, so good. Other things of like that overwhelming feeling, which can really bring on anxiety, writing lists.
Yep.
If I'm not writing lists, I'm fucking up.
Yep.
Yeah. You watch me. I'm going to like give it like 4 days and I'll fall in a heap or do something silly, you know? So just organizing your thoughts, I guess. And, you know, for others that might be meditation and yoga and listening to podcasts and whatever it might be, but it's organizing your thoughts. Others, and just having chats, actually, just having chats with mates has been really good.
Yep.
So just naming and taming it, you know?
Yep.
Drawing a circle around what it might be. And it's funny, it feels really, really big up there, but you've got to, as soon as you say it, it feels less intense, which is funny because you're like, no, it is, it's more intense than this, you know, but I just can't put it into words. It's like, oh, is it? Is it as intense as you think? Like, so
I think, sorry to interrupt there, but I've had it sort of explained. It's like, you know, when you're sick and you need to throw up and you don't want to throw up, but then you throw up and you feel better. Mm. And I think that is like, whether it is just, you know, saying how you feel to like a significant other or just saying how you feel in general and just speaking up, it's just like a load just lifted off. Like, totally. I think like, so it does pay to just communicate how you feel. I think that's, yeah, everything you've touched on is like such stuff that I have, you know, even just learning the last year, even like exercise, I've always sort of noticed I feel better, but I've never, until, you know, in the last couple of years, haven't really made it part of a disciplined thing, which it regulates my my mood and my my mental health. Another thing as well is that I wanted to talk about was that, like, how do you look at social media? Is it a friend or a foe or a bit of both? And you know, like it's obviously a tool for musicians, but going back to our mental health point, like how good is it? Like what are your experiences with social media?
Yeah, it's like you said, I think first and foremost for me, it's a tool, you know, to get the job done. In saying that, you know, I'm a benign social media citizen. Like I really don't interact as much as, you know, they would want me to.
Yeah. Yeah.
but it has helped a lot in businesses that I've ran. You know, the kind of undeniable fact is there's so many people on it. It's a lot of how you get exposure, or, you know, it's the virtual billboard that you get to put up. So it makes a lot of sense that you've got to use it still, and you can't necessarily wear a tin hat and kind of run off into the hills. But the idea of it is like, yeah, you got to use it. How do you use it? How's the best way to use it?
Yep.
And just so it cuts down on that time you're on it.
Yep.
I really think it's really detrimental to a lot of our mental health and how we compare ourselves to people and how we get our endorphins and how we measure our success and things like that. I think like fundamentally it's pretty kind of fucked up. So, you know, for me, I see it as a necessary evil, but not the be all and end all.
Yeah.
So whatever I can do to spend as little time on it as possible, I'll do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's a bit like, if I wasn't doing music, I probably would heavily consider deleting it. But you know, it does have some other social benefits, but I think, yeah, it has to be done in moderation. I sort of had it explained like it's like fast food for your mind kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, you know, you can have a burger every now and again or whatever or something like that, but it's not something you want to do every day. And I also recently learned that they've done some studies, and if you use it first thing in the morning, by the end of the day, your IQ points are about 10 lower or something like that. It's like it just really turns your brain to mush. Yeah. Like it's.
I totally believe it. I kind of did an experiment with it by just not using it in the morning and all these you know other bits and pieces. So not using it until midday, you know, and all of those things that I was saying before about like where success would start to generate, which is like actually get motivated to go for a run or to, you know, write those lists or to eat healthier, whatever it might be, they come so much easier when you haven't done that. You know, it's like I see that phone thing as, or that social media thing, even just phone distractions like that as a real, I see it as like stopping whatever momentum you've built in the day, like still. It just goes like bang, stop. All right, pick the wheel back up, start moving it again.
Yeah.
So I can kind of see it for what it is now and go, okay, well, if that's the case, you know, where do I want that dip in momentum to drop? And probably in the afternoon when you've done a great day's worth of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. You kind of earn it and it's like that little treat at the end of the day. And
yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's really good. I had one little point about that as well. Social media. I think that might do us for today.
Cool.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming on the podcast, Sam.
No worries, mine. Thanks for having me. It's been really fun. It's
good. Yeah, no, I really appreciate it. Thanks for tuning in. If you did, my name is Matt Collins. I play in the band Wharves and have my solo project. Do you have anything you want to plug? Any projects or anything?
Yeah, check out Volcanic Lovers on social media. Go on.
It's ironic that if anyone's listening to this on social media.
Volcanic Lovers, Hannah Campbell, Ali Palmer, The Buckleys, you know, there's a bunch of artists that I'm working with. And just come say good day if you ever get a chance.
Awesome. I'll put those links below when I upload this. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks, Sam.
Thanks, Matt.
Have a good one.
Yew. It's like a sauna in here.